سبتنا بالهوى أمر من الهوى.
Hi everybody, this is Eric Mann on Voices from the Frontlines, your public affairs hour. We're trying to get Dave Zirin, but it's okay. I already have a commentary on sports that he can respond to, so I'll keep you busy while we're tracking him down. Let me tell you who we're looking for. All points bulletin out for Dave Zirin. He's the Press Action's 2005 Sports Writer of the Year. He's been called an icon in the world of progressive sports. He's a columnist for Slam Magazine and a regular contributor to The Nation. His first book is called What's My Name, Fool? Sports and Resistance in the United States with Haymarket Books. So we're going to have him on in a minute. I have just a couple of quick announcements while we're looking for Dave. This Thursday night, for a lot of you know that I've been spending almost a tremendous amount of time after the Katrina hurricane in very, very close touch with the survivors, with the People's Hurricane Relief Fund, with families and friends Louisiana's incarcerated children, and you know a lot of them have been on the show, from Curtis Muhammad to Kali Okuno to Xochitl Bevedda. I've just finished a new book. The book is called Katrina's Legacy, White Racism and Black Reconstruction in New Orleans and the Gulf Coast. And if you're interested, this Thursday night at 7 o'clock at the Emmanuel Presbyterian Church, which is right near Barrendo on Wilshire, we're going to have a book opening for the book. Love you to turn out and come out. We could discuss New Orleans and discuss Katrina's legacy. And for those of you who've been following my work, it would mean a lot if you could spend the evening with us. If you want more information, you can call 213-387-2800. Now back to Zirin. Is he around?
Hello?
Dave, you around?
Yeah, Dave Zirin here. Hey, Eric.
Dave Zirin, what's happening? Glad you're on.
Oh, glad to be here, man.
Well, listen, we're going to have a good time because we're going to disagree on both your pieces that I've read, but they're both very good. So,
nice.
And then we're going to probably, I mean, not completely, we come from the same framework, and I hope we can get to the witch hunt of Barry Bonds, which I'm sure we're going to agree on completely. So let's start with your interesting article, You Can Keep the Faith. In the Nation magazine, it's posted on July 28, 2006. Bobblehead of Jesus, a crucifix in your Cracker Jacks. This is the valley of the shadow of greed. Major League Baseball hath begun to venture into after the July 27th debut of, quote, Faith Days with the Braves at Turner Field in Atlanta. Faith Days is a spectacle, as the New York Times wrote, where churches will get discounted tickets to family-friendly evenings of music and sports with a Christian theme. And in return, they mobilize their vast infrastructure of email and phone lists, youth program and chaperones, and of course their bus fleets to help fill the stands. You go on, and why don't you tell us more, that it's in fact a not that faith-based isn't disgraceful enough, but
right.
That it's really even tied to a right-wing group called
Focus on the Family.
Focus on the Family. How could you be against that?
Yeah, which is also connected to a group. The same guy, James Dobson, runs an organization called the Family Research Council, and this was in the original draft. But, of course, you know, these things do get cut. But the Family Research Council has often spoken before the CCC, CCC, which used to be the White Citizens Councils, direct link to the people who gloried in smashing the civil rights movement, Ku Klux Klan.
Well, I mean, I think that one of the things that strikes me is how effective the right is and how weak the left is. I mean, this is a very good exposure, but these people don't play. I mean, they're organizing. We were very involved in a campaign, No on Proposition 73 in Los Angeles. Proposition 73 was very cleverly called the parents' right to know. What their right to know was is whether or not their minor child was going to have an abortion. And if they had the right to know, if they were not given the right to know, the doctor could be indicted, et cetera, et cetera. Now, I read that, you know, certain right-wing think tanks were sending their, quote, cadre. You know, cadre for me was always a left-wing
term.
Right?
Sure.
Now they said they're sending their cadre into Los Angeles to organize on the Yes on 73 campaign.
Right.
So now these folks are organizing in the ballparks, right?
Right.
With faith-based nights. I mean, What do you think about that? I mean,
well,
besides
what's
that,
your,
it's,
what's your disagreement? I want to hear that.
Oh yeah, let's get enough of this. Being nice to each other. Okay, my disagreement is actually your punchline, which is you say here, Dobson likes to speak of being engaged in a civil war of values. In Major League Baseball, we can only assume, is his next strategic target. This is a tragedy. Baseball has always prided itself on the great secular, on being the great secular assimilator. In the early part of the 20th century, white immigrants of all languages, religions, and ethnicities would go to the ballpark and feel reborn as part of the great American experiment. A similar pattern held for African Americans and Latinos, with Jackie Robinson and Roberto Clemente both becoming powerful and enduring symbols of people fighting their rightful seat at the American table. But wait. For about 100 years, all the white folks were having this ethnic enclave by keeping blacks and Latinos out of it.
But wait, the next sentence, Eric, says this history contains a healthy measure of self-serving folklore.
But it's a myth that speaks to the best angels of our nature. I don't think
community acceptance and tolerance.
But if the myth is that the white folks kept the black people out, if the white folks attacked Jackie Robinson, if Branch Rickey told Jackie Robinson to turn the other cheek, to be the acceptable Negro for white people, if now 17 members of the Negro Leagues are finally accepted in the Hall of Fame in 2006,
sure,
because they're dead,
sure,
don't you think that it's a racist myth that doesn't speak to the best angels, but speaks to a more deceptive view of tolerance inside the white mind?
Sure. And no, there's nothing you say there that I disagree with, and I have a proud and happy history. People can go to edgeofsports.com of writing against racism in sports, writing against the racism that dominated sports at the first part of the 20th century. So I don't think there's any disagreement there in terms of the basic framework. But the point that I'm trying to make is, and I got to be honest with you, that there are some editing issues with how the piece was put together, but I still feel like it contains what I believe is that there is a mythology of baseball, backward-looking mythology, that they project today that says that baseball is about breaking down walls between people. Now, it's a self-serving mythology, but the mythology is basically what they're saying is baseball is something that should bring us together. And to me, Faith Nights is a massive step backward from that ideal. It's baseball saying with their, and I think this makes a difference, like their official line, basically. Their official political line is not baseball is a shared space, it's secular, it's a place where you can just go and have a good time. They're saying now, hey, baseball is Christian space. And not only Christian space, but the leading, nastiest edge of the right-wing conservative Christian movement.
But I think that to just take another, I mean, because you end by saying that they should keep these religious bigots out because inside is a sacred space. Now, I mean, as being a sports fan like you, a leftist like you, an anti-racist, I'm not questioning in any way your anti-racist credentials. I read a lot of good stuff that's come over the emails from you. I mean, we come from a common baseline. But I'm asking you, since we're all trying to learn from our own, from our own writing, could you inadvertently be creating certain illusions that you yourself don't believe in? Because, look, sports is a pretty ugly situation. If you look at Bill Roden's, which I'm really anxious to, to read in more detail, the $40 million slaves, and to talk about his point, which I think you and I would agree with, that baseball, even through integration, quote, destroyed the Negro Black Leagues, destroyed Negro managers, destroyed Negro cultures, coaches and cultures, destroyed the economic basis that existed under segregation. So it's not really the great assimilator, right? It's more the great manipulator. Don't you think that's fair?
Absolutely, I think that's fair. And Roden's book is a tremendous step forward in terms of, and I've gotten to read it, it's just worth saying that it's a tremendous step forward in terms of our basic understanding of how race has been manipulated in sports and how racism has been used and how sports has been used as a club to keep people divided in our society. What the point I'm trying to make in the piece, though, is when I say inside is sacred space, what I'm actually talking about is the act of play itself. the idea, and this person who I love it when they write about this is Lester Rodney, who I've written about at great length, who was the old sports editor of the Daily Worker in the 1930s.
Yeah, that's great.
And, you know, and he's still alive. He's actually in Oakland, you know, and he's sharp as a tack. And Rodney's point, which I share, which I'll agree with you, doesn't come across in this article as clearly as I am happy with. But the point that I share is that for all the faults in terms of how the game is manipulated, for all the faults in terms of how the game is used as a way to feed lies about this country and about how this country operates, the whole ideal of the level playing field, etc., the act of the game itself can speak to the best angels of our nature in terms of the basic cooperation on display in a double play, for example, or the fact if someone hits a home run that someone from like a game-winning home run that someone on the opposite team can shake their hand as they round the bases. Like these small things, actually, I think to me are almost like a counterposition to the muck and the crud that clings to the bottom of sports, like a barnacle on a boat.
Well, let's put it this way. I'll let you go on that because we have other things we want to, you know, we've had a good round on this. Let's move on. Let's talk about Barry Bonds.
Yes, sir.
I mean, I think let me start and you take it. And if you've done more writing on it than I've seen, you know, let's take it further. I mean, I think the thing is absolutely disgraceful.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, first of all, a dark-skinned, angry black man, one of the most amazing athletes of our time, who has already broken Babe the Alcoholic's record,
mm-hmm.
is challenging Hank Aaron's. Parenthesis. I thought the best analysis of whether or not Barry Bonds might have used performance-enhancing drugs was done by Mike Schmidt, who said, look, let's just look at the last 10 or 15 years. Let's assume that almost everybody, pitchers and catchers and ball players, were doing it. It wasn't illegal. Let's make it, if it's illegal, let's set the bar now. And we can't go back and let's just assume that that was the era. And what Mike Schmidt said is, if I was playing in that era, most likely that's what I would be doing. Now, I'm not indicting Barry by even implication, but the point was is that he was, as I understand it, at virtually every single time, whatever he did or didn't do was within the rules of Major League Baseball. He's been drug tested more times than ever. They can't find anything.
Mm-hmm.
So now they're going after him for tax evasion and perjury, two of the most ridiculous and racist ways to, you know, you can't get him on the very claim you, the very charge you made against him. So now let's deal with perjury, which is the, you know, during the McCarthy period, are you now ever, have you ever been a communist? I don't want to testify. Aha! But what kind of shoes do you have on, sir? And eventually you ask him enough questions, and that's why they kept saying, I'll take the fifth, right? Because any small statement you make to Congress, you could be arrested for perjury.
Mm-hmm.
So, and the fact of where the heck is the owner of the, is it McGowan, the head of the...
Yeah.
McGowan,
who also is the CEO of Safeway.
Has he not said a word in defense of Barry Bonds? So I've opened up, you know, enough cans of worms. I think it's racist. I think it's disgraceful.
Sure.
And one more thing, that after they indict him under a grand jury and his buddy is willing to go to jail to not testify, they now say, well, wait a minute, we have another grand jury. So what is this, like consecutive grand juries until we get you? So
it's ridiculous. You
know, why don't you take it from there?
One of the feds off the record said, Barry Bonds is our Al Capone.
That's right.
And, you know, and I got to tell you, like, I have heard every possible disgusting comparison. I've heard Barry Bonds, he's been called on sports radio baseball's Bin Laden. I heard him compared to a child molester. I mean, it's above and beyond. And why all this incredible abuse being heaped upon the man? Because he's not a good interview? Because he doesn't like reporters? I mean, what it comes down to is what you said and what I've been writing about since day one of this scandal, which is that this is much more about racism than, and it's much more about, to me, it shows both how far we've come and how, frankly, how far we have not come since the days when Henry Aaron was chasing down Babe Ruth's record. Because my read on it is that the corporate sports media will let an African-American athlete survive and even thrive if they're willing to be like a Tiger Woods, a Michael Jordan, a kind of safe corporate vessel with that will smile for the camera, and people can project whatever they want into that person. But if someone is angry, if someone makes political statements, as Barry Bonds has been wont to do, if someone takes on Congress, as Barry Bonds has been wont to do, then they are shown absolutely no mercy. And it's disgusting. And I got to tell you, I don't want to be wearing a Free Barry Bonds t-shirt in a year. But that is where they are pushing this, and they're pushing it so hard. We have to remember that when Balco was first indicted, and I'm going back to 2004 here, John Ashcroft led the press conference to talk about Balco being indicted. The idea of a U.S. Attorney General announcing the indictment of a tiny little steroid outpost in the Bay Area, I mean, that's literally like trying to shoot a silverfish bug with a machine gun.
Well, as you said, I mean, one of the things, and we're with Dave Zirin, is that how I pronounce it?
Yeah, like a fire siren. Absolutely.
Got it. All right, I get it. And he's a really good sports analyst. He's got a book that I'm going to plug as soon as I get it. You can plug it. Every author doesn't need it. What's the name of your new book?
It's a book called What's My Name, Fool? Sports and Resistance in the United States. And I talk about Bonds, Lester, Rodney, and racism in baseball, Jackie Robinson, and a lot of the stuff we've been talking about today.
Well, one of the things that's Haymarket Books, right, put it out.
Yes, sir.
I think one of the things that I think about a lot is that white people have a phenomenal guilt for all the violence that they've inflicted on black people from the first slave that came here to today. Today we have, in 1980, there were 320,000 to 350,000 people in prison. Today, you know, 26 years later, there's 2.2 million, of whom 1 million are black. Everything is being criminalized. And white people are in a frenzied hatred of themselves, their own lives, but mainly a projection against angry black people in particular. They are very freaked out by angry black people because they really know that they deserve to be the subject of anger. So the punishing, the constant punishing of the lead slave, the punishing of the strong slave, we have to knock him down to size when he is, you know, amazing. Look, I saw a weekend game about 2 years ago against the Braves, and they brought in, I don't know if who their closer was. Smoltz.
Oh, Smoltz.
And,
yeah.
I mean, three straight times, Barry Bonds, I mean, they said I got to pitch to him as opposed to pitch around the guy. And, I mean, three straight times, he rocketed a home run. And I watched it and said, this is one of the greatest sports performances. This man is 38, 39 years old at the time. Mm-hmm. Just an amazing hand-eye coordination. And they're going to try to destroy his whole legacy.
Absolutely. And you know what Mike Schmidt said that's absolutely correct is that anytime you're talking about a player, it's all about comparing them to other players in their era. It's no good comparing Barry Bonds to Henry Aaron or Babe Ruth or what have you. You have to be compared to who you were pitching to, who you were hitting against, etc. And by that criteria, Barry Bonds is the greatest player I have ever seen. He's the greatest player of my lifetime. He's the greatest player I've ever had a privilege to watch. Because if steroids helped with hand-eye coordination, the very hand-eye coordination that you're speaking of, Eric, if it helped with that, I could go to Gold's Gym and find an all-star team. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, of course.
I'll find myself a couple of muscle heads with, you know, growing a third head out of their back, what have you, and they'll go up to the plate and hit 50 home runs. It doesn't work that way.
That's right. And, of course, it's not like any pitcher would ever use a controlled substance.
Oh, ridiculous.
It's only hitters. Okay, well, listen, we're on that, and let's stay on that, because I think you and I may be helping to form the Free Barry Bonds Committee at the rate they're going. You know, what is it, the former governor of, what's his name, George, who's the chief prosecutor now, McCarthy?
Oh, George Mitchell.
McCarthy Mitchell, right?
Yeah.
I mean, this guy, they drag him out of the mothballs to investigate Barry Bonds.
This is very interesting, actually. I mean, we should actually just spend a quick second on this.
Sure. You want to go? Keep going.
Very, very briefly, because this is really important. First of all, about George Mitchell, former senator from Maine, he's a complete fraud because he is chairman of the board at Walt Disney Company, which owns ESPN. So they're having him head up this impartial inquiry. That's basically what it's about, is get Barry Bonds out of baseball before he breaks Henry Aaron's record, and protect the owners. Don't look at what the owners did to actually create the juiced era in Major League Baseball. And the juiced era is about so much more than steroids. It's about extorting cities to pay for these tiny stadiums. It's about the way they broke the umpires union in the late 90s because they weren't calling the strike zone small enough. I mean, it's a profound sham, and to put it on Barry Bonds' shoulders is about, frankly, them actually exploiting racism in the United States as a way to deflect attention for themselves, and it's ridiculous. But it's also worth saying that what George Mitchell is doing is actually separate and apart from what the feds are doing right now. The feds, trying to get Barry Bonds in the pokey behind bars, they've actually told the people, some of Barry Bonds' ex-business associates and ex-girlfriends, they've told them that they're not allowed to speak to George Mitchell and the Mitchell Commission because they need to save those witnesses for the federal grand jury, and they're worried if they say one thing to the Mitchell Commission and another thing to the grand jury, it'll be exploited by Barry Bonds' defense. Now, let me ask you this. What does it tell you if they're worried that they won't have their story straight from one group to another? That's not what you say when somebody's telling the truth.
Well, we're gonna keep going on this because
I get on my high horse.
No, that's all right. Your high horse is great, and for listeners out there, you can see that we found a cause that we have some passion for. I mean, you know, New Orleans is serious, nuclear war, global warming, but do not mess with Barry Bonds on this show. Let's just be clear. Now we're gonna move to You're a Good Man, Larry Brown, and boy, do I disagree with that. Now, this is, you have to understand that, okay, I care about a lot of things, but I can be despondent for 2 days over the Knicks draft choices. So I come out of, there's anything in sports, but you deal with the Knicks, I come out of Harry Gallatin, Sweetwater Clifton, Connie Simmons, Al McGuire, Dick McGuire. I was 7 years old, under the bed with a radio big as a house, trying to hide it from my mother, listening to Knick games. Sweetwater Clifton, the first Negro black member, was, of course, my favorite player. I've suffered with them. I was in prison when the Knicks won their first championship, and I started arguing with the guard about I wanted to stay for the post-game show. He told me to go back to my cell. I said, no, you don't understand how serious this is. He said, no, you don't understand how serious it was. Next thing I know, I'm in the hole. For 3 days. So it was still worth it because the Knicks won the championship. So, okay, my brother, here's my riff on you ready, my article on Larry Brown real fast?
Oh, go for it.
Okay. Larry Brown is a sick man. He attacked Nate Robinson for throwing a ball against the backboard. One more time and you'll never play again. He told Jamal Crawford he would start and put him in as a sixth man. Jamal disintegrated for at least a month. He told Trevor Ariza, a dynamic athletic player who was banned from shooting a jump shot, refused to talk to him, and told him he was delusional. He created a crazy quilt of starting players in their hometown. Why not start whose name rhymes with bench? And Maurice Taylor from Michigan told Brown this was crazy. He kept Channing Frye on the bench after he scored 30 points, told the press the rookies have hit a wall, which isn't going to help them jump over it, started so many players that the only thing that was clear was that he was nuts. Play my way, parenthesis, play the white man's way, play the dictator's way. Reggie Miller said, diplomatically, by the third year, Larry was getting a little out of control. Chauncey Bullough said, sometimes the things he said were so way off, I would go home and tell my wife and we had a laugh. He's the abusive father, the liar, the racist, that you're great if you kiss my butt, but if not, you're a co-conspirator. So what do you think?
Man, I mean, first and foremost, I would just start by saying, like, Barry Bonds, that's where my head is. Larry Brown, the individual, I mean, to speak about him as being a racist, I mean, he is somebody who I feel comes from an athletic tradition of anti-racism. I mean, if you're talking about it apart from the sports world, as somebody who, this is what I try to talk about in my piece, as somebody who grew up in Brooklyn, somebody who was deeply influenced by Jackie Robinson, deeply influenced in his own mind, someone who grew up in the tutelage under Dean Smith at North Carolina, who has been an outspoken opponent against racism, who used to do day trips with his team to the death row of North Carolina, so that there's at least a political strain there that speaks to the other thing. What you're saying about him being a complete lunatic this year, I completely agree with. He was insane. He set a record for the most number of lineups ever in a season.
Right.
completely insane. I'm with you on that. My take, though, is like to hire a Hall of Fame coach for that much money and give him 1 year, when to me clearly this year was about him acting like a crazy man and just trying to see who was down with the program and who wasn't, I mean, to me is nuts in and of itself. I think actually it's right to give Isaiah the chance to do what he can do with this team since he put it together. And
that's
nobody,
right.
Nobody quite understands why. I mean, he has some of the parts he has, but it's like, hey, if Isaiah has a plan for this, let's try to see what he can do with it. So I think that at the end of the day, it does make more sense. But I wrote that column when everybody was taking Brown to the woodshed, and I wanted to just try to flex it from a different view.
Okay, and I'll say that on my end is that Bill Davidson loved him and then hated him. By the way, Isaiah screwed Bill Davidson too, so they're two pretty treacherous dudes. So listen, I can see that we're going to have you on every day for 59 minutes, and we'll squeeze in all the other things.
Can I say one thing about Isaiah real quick?
Real quick.
A quote about Bill Clinton, where they said he's the kind of guy who would shake your hand and pee on your leg.
Yep.
That to me describes Isaiah Thomas.
Absolutely. The only man with a perpetual smile who's going to stab you in the back. Well, listen. So this has been really fun having you on, Dave. We'll have you on again. I can see even if we only have three listeners who care, you and I are going to have a great time.
Hey, and Barry Bonds has spoken out for Katrina victims, unlike 99% of athletes. So just wanted to throw that in, too, because I know you've written about it beautifully.
Thanks a lot, Dave. And we'll have you on again. So
thank
listen,
you, Eric.
This is your host, Eric Mann. And really, thanks a lot for joining us. We'd like to thank our guests, Mel Weiss and Dave Zirin. Today, Zirin, we got to get it right. Today, we heard music from Stevie Wonder, Abdel Halim Hafez, Eddie Palmieri, my main man from Puerto Rico. You can listen to previous Voices shows at www.thestrategycenter.org and send comments to voices@thestrategycenter.org. We'd like to thank our producer, Alan Minsky, our production assistant, Lisa Adler, who lines up a lot of these guests, our engineer, Jose Benavides. And we'll see you next week from Voices from the Frontlines Radio. Don't miss this evening at 8, the Strategy Center with Antonio Gonzalez. And up next is the unique, the inimitable, Susie Wiseman on Beneath the Surface. Eric Mann, see you next week on Voices from the Frontlines.